Z1077 welcomes you to Up Close, a weekly public affairs program presented by Z1077 News. You're invited to call in with your questions and comments. Our call-in number is 366-8471. Now, your host for Up Close, Gary Danielle.
Well, thank you, mystery announcer, wherever you are. And welcome to the Z1077 Up Close Show for this absolutely beautiful May 19th, 2023. I'm Gary Danielle, your host. Our producer is Michelle Alley. And our phone number is 760-366-8471. The Up Close Show is presented with the special interest of the Joshua Tree area and the Z1077 News Department. Our guest in studio today from the High Def Fringe Fest, the keynote speaker, Julianne Franco, and the founder, Miri Hunter. And Miri and Julianne, welcome to the Z1077 Up Close Show.
Thank you, Gary.
Yeah. Now, Miri, you've become a familiar voice for us.
I do what I can.
Yeah. And Julianne Franco, we're just delighted to have you here and somewhat honored that you're here in our community and in our presence. So we're gonna get to know you in a little bit. But first, let's talk about the High Def Fringe Fest.
Absolutely.
Which is this weekend. Starts today.
Today, 5 p.m., yep.
So for people who don't understand what a Fringe Fest is, define that for me.
The Fringe concept started in 1947 in Edinburgh, Scotland, when there was a big theater festival and there were so many actors, performers there that they couldn't get into the actual theater to do their performance. So they did their performances on the Fringe. And that's where the Fringe comes from. And Fringe is in countries all over the planet.
So in general, in theatrical terms, Fringe means those performances, actors, plays, which may not have made it to the main stage yet.
Yeah.
But they're out on the fringes and they're doing performances. It's sort of like off-Broadway.
It's kind of off-Broadway, only it's off Joshua Tree.
Off Joshua Tree. So. And what are some of your special features you have coming up? And again, tonight, tell us what's happening tonight, and then we'll go through the itinerary just a little bit.
Great. Okay, so tonight, starting at 5 o'clock, we have a couple of plays. One is called Twisted and Shouting. So it's about funny people in funny situations doing monologues, which should be really great, and it's a premiere. We also have Lee Scott, who's going to be doing electronic ragas. He'll be outside and he'll be playing music for us. Then we have some films, one called Big Feet, one called 37, A Love Story, and one called Monster Olympics. So that's kicking us off for the festival. We're also going to be doing A Blessing of the Land at 6:30. We encourage everyone to come to that. Dancing Song of Dead People in Other Worlds is another one of our plays this evening.
Run that title by me again.
It's good, right? Dancing Song of Dead People in Other Worlds.
Cool, okay.
And that's a one-person show, and that's going to be awesome. Yeah. And then also this evening, we're going to have a dance, we're going to have some comedy, but I just wanted to say, since we're talking about Ukraine and Julianne is here, we're doing a stage reading of a play called Baba Precia for those who could not leave. And it's about a family that was in Chernobyl, when Chernobyl happened, and they were supposed to leave, and everyone left except the grandmother. And then the mother and the son had to come back because they had nowhere else to go. So it's all about home. It's about how cultures are changing. And it has this funny little quirk in it that I really love. The officer says to the woman, you know, you have to leave because they want to bring tourists here to Chernobyl. And I thought they made that up, but come to find out, they actually are trying to bring a tourism industry to Chernobyl. So, I mean, it's just...
Hey, kids!
Let's
visit Chernobyl!
So it's crazy. it's got magic, it's got a lot of folklore, and really great performances, and that's going to be tonight at 8, followed by some dance.
Okay. And tomorrow, the big thing is the speech.
Yes.
The keynote speaker is Julianne Franco. And Julianne, welcome to Joshua Tree and welcome to the Z1077 Up Close Show. Delighted to have you here with us.
Thank you. And I'm delighted as well and also honored. You said you were honored that
I am.
I'm honored to be here.
And
as well.
I've got a little bit of a bio here, but I want you to tell us about yourself. Julianne Franco, where are you from?
I was born in the Bronx, New York, and I lived there for 7 years of my life. Then we moved to Connecticut, and then I've lived all over America for quite some time. And then in my early 20s, mid-20s, I moved to Ukraine. I was a teacher there at a high school, and then I came back to work on theater a bit, and I got my MFA at Yale, at Yale School of Drama. And then I went to Ukraine, and I've pretty much been there ever since, and back and forth the past number.
Now, when did you go to Ukraine?
Very first time was 1993.
And you are Ukrainian. That is.
I'm of Ukrainian descent. Yeah, my grandparents came from Ukraine.
Okay. Yeah. Well, when all your grandparents come from one place, that's
amazing.
That's amazing. Yeah. Now, Julianne, when you went to Ukraine, what was the date when you first went there? I know you just told me, but.
I'm thinking it's 1993. I'm having a bit of a brain freeze. Right after it declared independence, a year. So
you went back to Ukraine right after it was no longer part of the Soviet Union.
Yes.
So was it a big adjustment going on? I mean, that's got to be a huge cultural upheaval for that country. And, of course, we'll talk about what's happening now.
It felt very Soviet when I first went there, and that was a huge adjustment for me because I had this Ukrainian background and a sense of what it meant to be Ukrainian, and I got there, and it was both that, the sort of soul part of being Ukraine 100% was there, but just how things worked administratively was very terse.
So the infrastructure was Soviet.
Going through border controls, that probably was the worst experience the very first time. And now now forget that. At that time, going through other places, because you wouldn't get there directly, it would be so pleasant. And then you get to Ukraine, and it wasn't so pleasant in terms of the border control administration. So.
After your degrees from both Harvard and Yale, you then go back to Ukraine. What are your first impressions of the artistic feel in Ukraine as opposed to what you had just left in the United States?
A lot more soulful.
Okay.
A lot more soulful. I would say the very big theaters, I was impressed at how quick, how fast, how they could stop on a dime. That's one type of theater. I worked in experimental theater, or I became attracted to experimental theater, and it was unlike anything that I had ever taken part in here. And so that was it's what ultimately drew me to being there.
In many small and medium and even a few big cities here in the United States, your local theater becomes kind of the focus of the focus of the cultural activity in that community. What part of the community in Ukraine does theater place? Is there a small other community theaters all over? Is it primarily the big cities? Where do they place the arts in their priorities?
This is something that maybe is a good carryover from Soviet times, that theater is fully represented by the state. There were no fringe theaters initially. Now there are some, but there were none. So the state supported everything, and everybody went to the theater. That's something that really surprised me, because friends I have here who would never, ever go to the theater, who are similar there, they always go to the theater. It's just part of their daily.
And it was government supported.
Yes, all of it is.
So going to the theater was part of their daily routine in Ukraine.
Yeah.
How did that make the theater different? Was it more representative of those communities?
Oh, that's a good question. The theater that I worked at was a sort of fascinating one because it came at the crest of the end of Soviet times, and they were a theater that were looking for new ways of expressing themselves. So in that sense, they were a very focal point for the younger generation or older people who had new views in life. It was a focal point. And the theater I worked at, the Les Courbes Theater, there was always, if you'd go around the street, you could hear people saying, you didn't know, you just could hear, hey, did you hear what they're doing at Les Courbes Theater? And it would be a regular topic of conversation.
Now, you would say you were doing experimental theater in the Ukraine when you first went back there in the 90s. Describe what the experiment was.
To break with Soviet traditions, because even though they could stop on dimes, it was really talented people doing something, and I don't mean this in a bad way, but it was almost like factory assembly. So you'd have really wonderfully talented people coming in and doing these wonderful performances, but they really never varied. You went in and the experience was the same. And this theater was looking more towards actor-centric performances, looking to expand the repertoires, looking to look at the old repertoires in new ways.
Art versus product.
Basically, yeah. Yeah. But I would, I mean, some of, I really am fortunate, Bogdan Stupka was a brilliant, brilliant actor who worked at these very large theaters and did very many other types of work. He's someone who worked in that system, and I would go, and it would be an experience every time because he had that level of talent. So I'm not in any way condemning any part of that type of theater.
Tell us a little bit about the cultural and social makeup in Ukraine. Is it a matriarch? Is it a patriarch? What is the culture of the Ukrainian people? I know this is not a theater question, but I think right now with what's going on in the world, the Ukraine and Russia and the United States involvement, I think people are really interested in that.
I may get in trouble for this, but I would say the men think they run everything, but the women really do.
Oh, that's just like here. Yeah, that's no difference from what's going on here.
Yeah, that's the way it's supposed to be, right?
So,
I look, something that's really exciting, one of the newer theaters to have emerged, it is a state theater, and it's gone through a million different transitions, but it's almost entirely female-run just by coincidence, and they are doing really lovely, exciting. This is Lesa Ukrainka Theater in Lviv, which the transition from that used to be, I think, was called, oh boy, if I can remember it the right way, I think it was the Red Army Theater back in the day when I first got there.
Let's change that name. Yeah.
It did get changed, and then now it's changed to the Lesa Ukrainka Theater.
Okay.
And they run, actually, this is really interesting, the play that we're going to do tomorrow, they have in parallel something called Drama UA, which is a playwriting concourse. We have the word concourse in English?
We do have that word, yes.
Okay. Yeah. Competition, that's it.
Competition.
And every year plays are set, and this actually, I'm jumping ahead of your question. This year they had more plays than ever in their history sent to them, and that just made, when I read that, goosebumps went down, that there's that much of an urgency to write and create new things. But this theater now, that is pretty much women-run, not by design, it just happened that way. They are producing all of these types of works and in new ways and coming up with very phenomenal new type of things.
You know, it's hard for us to get a feel for the culture of Ukraine because all we're getting is like, you know, a 30-second news B-roll, you know, from here to there. But I get the impression that it's a very much a family-oriented culture.
Yes.
They honor their elders. They're concerned with what the kids are learning as they're forming. Is that a correct impression?
Yes, very much so. It is a very, very family centric society, and
I find it fascinating that a country in war, and it's an awful war, and I don't think anybody would disagree with that, finds themselves all of a sudden having a cultural peak. And you said something that kind of keyed me, that they're trying to get it all in. Is it like they're trying to get it before the war continues, or what is the feeling behind that? Why do you think you're getting an uptick in the arts?
It's partly cultural preservation.
Ah, okay, yes.
I think that is a large part of it. I think it's also they have as I was saying, back in even Soviet times, people went to theater, but not just theater, to museums, to all of that. It's ingrained in them to do so. And now that they're in a point in time where they're having to say, hey, I'm Ukrainian, it just suddenly, I give another example. Yesterday we had a lovely evening and we were listening to some music of some friends of mine, a wonderful group named Korbasi. And as I was listening to them, not having heard their voices for quite some time, it was so stirring to me. And to know that this is a part of me, this is a part of what I've grown up with, this is a part, I've been there since the beginning of their creation. It's a wonderful phenomenon, and if you take that and make it exponential to an entire country, they have all of this stuff, and it's theirs, and suddenly this is something at risk. They're going to feel it that much stronger.
So the Russian cultural influence is an influence of the arts for the plain man. I mean, there's a lot of culture ingrained in there. You talk about arts and music and theater.
I'm sorry, I misunderstood something.
Yeah, the Russian culture.
What about Russian culture?
The Russian culture of the arts has infused itself into the Ukrainian society.
No, I would say quite the opposite.
Okay, great, okay.
So I would say quite the opposite. Explain
that to me.
Well, if we go back hundreds of years, Ukraine... You can get into all sorts of technicalities, and I'm not a historian, so I'm going to try to put it as best as I can.
And I'll get more specific here in a minute. So,
but
I'm wandering off here. So.
Ukraine and Ukrainian people, I'm not saying Ukraine in terms of a nationally recognized border, but Ukrainian people have existed for a long, long, long time. Their language, their culture, their ways of doing things. And theater in Ukraine emanated way before there was even something called Russia.
Thank you. That's exactly what I was looking for.
Even before there was Russia, and this is also kind of interesting, right now Ukrainians don't call it Russia. They call it Moscovia because that's, in fact, what it once was. When Russia decided it was going to subsume all the cultures around it, that's when it named itself Russia.
I'm going to talk more with Julianne Franco, the keynote speaker for the High Desert Fringe Festival and the founder of the High Desert Fringe Festival, Mary Hunter, in just a few moments. We'll be right back with more of the Z1077 Up Close Show.
Interest rates on hard money loans don't fluctuate with the Federal Reserve. This is Patty Brown, aka the Loan Lady or the Queen of Green. Do you need cash for home improvements? Trying to fix up your home to put on the market? We offer great alternatives and flexible lending for home improvement loans and mortgages. Our money to loan comes from local investors looking to invest in people, not credit scores. We've got money for your next project available and fast closing too. Call me today at 365-7003. The Loan Lady. We want to be your real estate lender.
The new Smokin' Triple Stack at Firehouse Subs. Stacked with honey ham, smoked turkey, and slow-smoked brisket, it's one of their meatiest subs ever. To top it off, a portion of every purchase helps provide life-saving equipment to first responders across the country. So at Firehouse Subs, they don't just make subs, they make subs that are big, bold, and craveable. They make their subs differently because their subs make a difference. Firehouse Subs. Enjoy more subs, save more lives. Home Depot Center, Yucca Valley.
Did you ever discover something that changed everything? At Valley Community Chapel, we invite you to discover community, discover freedom, and discover who you were created to be in Jesus Christ. Through our Sunday morning and Wednesday evening services, the many activities happening throughout the week, or our preschool and daycare, we invite you to come and discover the truth of God's Word. I'm Pastor Jake, and I'd like to invite you to do life together with us at Valley Community Chapel, vcctogether.com.
Registration is now open for the 32nd annual Grubstake Run. The town of Yucca Valley invites runners and walkers of all ages and fitness levels. The 10 and 5K runs are timed competitive events with awards for overall male and female winners in each race and top finishers in each age division. The 2K walk is perfect for those who want to participate in a non-competitive way. Early bird registration ends May 19th, so register today at the Yucca Valley Community Center or online at yucca-valley.org. The event is part of the Grubstake Days weekend celebration. Visit grubstakedays.com to view all the activities.
And we are back with the Z1077 Up Close Show. Our guest in studio today, the keynote speaker for the High Def Fringe Fest, and the co-founder, along with Ann Van Haney, Mary Hunter. And welcome, Mary. Glad
Thank
to have
you so
you
much.
Here.
Oh, it's great to be here.
We got to give Ann her props.
Oh, yes, so, absolutely.
Yeah,
she's there at the retreat center right now, setting up stages. So
and,
yeah,
and celebrating curly hair.
And celebrating curly hair.
I am sure, Ann, if you heard that, congratulations on the curly hair. So, our guest in studio today is Julianne Franco, who we've been talking to, and I've been throwing some questions at her that made us both think a little bit, and of course, Mary. Now, Julianne, it says here that you created something called the Anthrobus Convention. Can you explain what that is?
That was created I was a Fulbright scholar at the time, and I was looking to find American dramas that had been translated into Ukrainian, and I found that there's few and far between, and then when I went to read them, one was Tennessee Williams' Streetcar Named Desire, and it was in Ukrainian, and I read it, and it was nothing like Tennessee Williams, and I thought, what happened? So somebody told me.
Lost in translation.
Well, it was doubly lost in translation because what would happen is that originally it would be translated into Russian, and then from Russian it was translated into Ukrainian. So by the time they got it, it's one of my most favorite lines of his early introduction is he's talking about what the street sounds sound like, and he talks about the infatuated fluency of brown fingers. And in the Ukrainian, it just read, a black person is playing the piano. And I read that, and that one line so incensed me, I said, we need to translate something. So my partner and myself, Vasil Mitsko, one of the works I had wanted to work on was Thornton Wilder's The Skin of Our Teeth. So he and I sat down and we translated it, and from that we became the Anthrobus Convention. And it was initially aimed at translating American works or English works that were meant for theater into Ukrainian directly, so it had that live presence.
And yet still had the sensitivity to what the author wanted.
Yeah.
Okay, was it still Stella for the streetcar?
Stella!
I mean, without him yelling Stella on the street, it's just not streetcar.
That was there. And actually, I didn't teach it. I told him, let's figure out, let's get it. And actually, it never happened. But let's get a grant, let's do something so that you can see these things firsthand.
Yeah. Did you start producing those things? I mean, is there a Ukrainian version of Streetcar Named Desire still out there?
I have seen some that's not, that I don't know whose version, and it often happens that theaters themselves will commission somebody to do a direct translation, but then they're not put out there for the general public, and it's not assembled in one place for people to be able to read, like if you're in school, and there are no such anthologies. Or there was one that was made actually while I was a Fulbright scholar. Verlana Takacs, who also runs a wonderful group called Yara Arts in New York, she had created an anthology.
It seems like most of your formal education is involved with Ukrainian arts and American arts. There, you talked about going to Ukraine on a Fulbright, and then translating these plays. Has that always been your focus of interest because of your heritage?
No.
Okay.
No.
What made that happen?
Come to my keynote speech.
Nice plug.
Okay, well, actually, we're going to talk about your keynote speech, which is, what is the role of the arts and humanities in war and conflict?
Mm-hmm.
And I won't make you give the speech here on the radio, so we won't do spoilers. But that's fascinating, and I wish I could be there, but I direct plays locally, and I have a show up on Saturday
You're
night.
You're excused, Gary.
It's Pinocchio.
Yeah, it's Pinocchio.
So Gary
tells me it will be recorded, so you can watch it after.
Oh, okay. Okay, great. Mira, I want to go back to Fringe Fest a little bit. Now, you started with Anne Van Haney 6 years ago.
Yes.
And I remember 6 years ago, it was a real chore. I mean, it was very difficult for you to pull this off. People go, what's Fringe Fest? What are these weird people doing there in Joshua Tree? But now, 6 years later, people understand what it is. I don't know how your ticket sales are, but more and more people are talking about Fringe Fest and getting involved in it and understanding what it is. So what has changed in the past 6 years for you besides just the people understand what it is now?
I think one of the things that's changed is that we went through COVID. So I think coming out of COVID, people are starting to get back out and to do things, and they want to know things and just experience life again. And of course, theater on this range is about living and what's going on. So, and I think a lot of the new shows that are coming out that we're having this year have some focus around what happened in those past 3 years where we were going through. So I think that was a big change.
Yeah, we always, as a culture, have chronicled our societal upheavals in the arts.
Yes, absolutely.
And COVID, of course, is a big, big part of that societal upheaval here. In this weekend's Fringe Fest, what specifically are some of the acts that we will see that you think are highlights? I know you can't just read them all off, but you know, what's sort of the don't miss this ones besides the keynote speech from Julianne Franco
and Baba Prisia
and Baba Prisia, yes,
and who?
Baba Prisia, the play.
Oh,
that she translated.
All right,
which
great.
Is tonight, the Chernobyl story.
Okay,
yeah.
And when and where tonight?
And that's tonight. It's going to be at the Joshua Tree Retreat Center in Noble Hall, starting at 8:00.
Okay.
But you know, the festival starts at 5:00, so one of the things we want to I don't know if educate is the word, but to bring into the community is that it's a festival, and that we want you to come and not just see one show, but come and see three or four shows and talk to the performers and hang out and just get to know more about the arts and the people that are creating them.
Breakout sessions,
we're gonna
artist talks.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We have... coming up on Sunday, actually, we have like two really good panels. One is a songwriting panel, and one is just a writer's panel. So we have local songwriters that we all know, Pat Kearns, Ted Quinn, Tom Merrick, and someone from the Low Desert, Ann Britt. They're going to talk about the process of songwriting. And I think since we have so many musicians out here, it's good to know what's going on.
Because that is performance.
And that, yes, it is.
Yeah.
And then we also have a session on writers. So we're going to discuss the difference between how you write poetry versus how you write a screenplay versus how you write prose, and how what are the things that people have in common with those.
Great opportunities for people who are interested in those things,
mm-hmm.
yeah, to sort of dip their toe in the water,
yes,
so to
exactly.
speak.
Yes, exactly. Get some tips and, you know, keep going, how to unblock writer's block and things like that.
I'm still fascinated with the play about Chernobyl becoming a tourist attraction.
Is that wild? I couldn't have dreamt that up. That was just like, whoa.
I'm gonna have to catch the stream of that.
Yeah,
That should be very interesting. Any full-length shows, or is it all one acts?
Some of them are...
Which is the nature of Fringe, by the way.
Yeah, exactly. To have one-person shows and shorter performances. I think Baba is probably our longest show, but there are still a lot of things to be seen. There's a great one called Desperate to be Seen, Horrified of Being Known, which is a ghost story, but it's a play. We have a lot of improv this year. And we're doing, I want to talk about a play called, I hope I say this right, Furukuchi Ona. Okay, and that's a one-woman play about Japan and this monster, and it's an ancestral story that's happening. So I think that'll be beautiful. So that's happening.
So you really are touching a lot of different bases.
We are trying to do the thing. We're going to be diverse and we're going to be inclusive, and it's just, you know, it's good to get out and meet all these different people. And to hang out, and just I think that's how you get to know community, how you get to know different people, and how we change the world by knowing each other.
How did it come to be that Julianne Franco is your keynote speaker? How did that process come to be, Mary?
Little known fact that Julie and I were roommates.
100 years ago.
Not that long.
Okay.
We were roommates back in...
So a little personal connection there.
Okay. Back in Cambridge. And we did a lot of theater when we were hanging out in Cambridge and Boston. She would write something, I would direct it. I would write something, she would direct it. And that's how we met. And we were roommates for like 3 years, 4 years, yeah. That's how this happened. And I suddenly remember we were thinking about who can we get to do our keynote. And I'm thinking, oh, I don't know anybody. Who? And then I go, oh my gosh, Julianne is now in the country.
And she was assisted in being your keynote speaker by the California Humanities. Tell us how that came about.
Yeah.
That's also pretty cool for our area to get that kind of support.
So we applied, Project Sheba, the nonprofit that houses all of our performances, applied for a grant, and we got a quick grant from California Humanities. So that helped to defray costs and things like that. So we were really excited about it, and... yeah, it was great. It was a surprise. I ran to my email going, oh my gosh, we got it. So that helped to defray the cost. And because it helped to defray the cost, we're actually giving bigger discounts for the tickets this weekend.
Yeah, I read that. You're sort of passing on the gift from the state to the people who are coming to the
thing. Yeah, thank you for phrasing it that way.
Yeah, that's great. Well, it is. That's exactly what it is. So yay for that. Julie, I'm not trying to get maudlin here, but I think we all know how horrible things are in Ukraine right now. So the Ukrainian arts, are they on hold while the country goes through this?
Absolutely.
What is the condition
not.
Of them now?
If anything, from what I know, because I'm here, I'm not there, but from what I know of my friends, performances are still going on. There was initially everything had to shut down because we just didn't know, and I love that I'm saying we, even though I'm here. The outcome was not known initially what was going to be, and so I know.
No,
for
the
example,
outcome still isn't known. It's yes.
It, but there's a sense of the more that they contribute to what's true, the stronger that truth becomes. So in the beginning, for example, my partner Vasil works at a museum, And the whole gig was get all of the riches out and preserved in some place so that nothing can happen to it, because notoriously in places that have gotten bombed, they go in and they steal the art and bring it back up north. So there's that, or that that for the sake of preserving the art, period. Because traditionally, and also this goes back to a wonderful part of Ukraine's history, there was one man for whom the museum is named, and oh boy, right now I'm having a brain freeze and can't remember, but he single-handedly, one person in Soviet times when they were told you got to get rid of all of this, he got it, preserved it, and kept it. And so now, by the grace of what he did then, the museum now exists in these wonderful sculptures and things that would have otherwise been destroyed. It exists.
So the arts continue in war-torn Ukraine.
Yes.
Do you think that little uptick in arts is sort of a up yours Russia move by the Ukrainian people? You're not going to stop us from creating art? You're not going to stop us from performing?
I think that may be a side reason for it, or it's like one of those things that, like, when I fast, I know I'm going to lose weight. I don't fast to lose weight, but it's a nice side benefit of it. That they are doing something for the purity of their own hearts and souls and preservation. And the fact that it's maybe having some kind of adverse effect to their northern neighbors, that's kind of a bonus. But I don't think that's even at the core or even a little bit of the reason why they're doing it. I think it's just a little benefit on the side.
Okay. So that arts and cultural infusion into Ukrainian society still continues even through the war.
Yes.
When's the last time you were in Ukraine?
3 years ago.
Okay. And of course, it was before the Russia attack, but there was still some politics going on there with Crimea and...
Yeah, and actually, you know what? I would say this war started in 2014. It's just that nobody noticed. And the support we were supposed to be getting, because we signed all these treaties if we gave up our nukes and so on, that they would be protected if anyone. And actually, interesting, Russia was one of the places that said, we'll protect you if anybody attacks. So they gave up their nukes, and history has changed very much. If they hadn't done that, it might not be going on right now. Other things might have been going on. So I don't want to be a forecaster in that way, but I've started going around and I don't remember the beginning of the question.
Most of your work has had to do with American art and Ukrainian art and the bridge between the two. What is the primary difference between the theatrical performances in Ukraine and theatrical performances in the United States? And we talked earlier about art versus product. So we do tend to commercialize things here in the United States. So I'm not answering the question for you, but I'm just kind of defining it.
Well, I think in a way you maybe have. I will say I have seen two trends, and it goes in two ways, that there is an embracing of the Ukrainian ethnicity in the arts, and that's really surging right now. And it seems like the professionalism or the big show, I'm not talking about right now, because I don't know what big shows are happening right now, and probably there are not big shows happening. But I was seeing more and more commercial projects come in with foreign directors coming in, and that they would get like billing as big sensational things. So that type of thing that didn't exist when I first got there was existing at the time, around the last time that I was there.
And our culture here, which tends to follow whatever is going on at this time, has become more and more interested in Ukraine and Ukrainian artists and Ukrainian theater. Mm-hmm. And we see more people like you telling us about what's going on in Ukraine and Ukrainian arts and Ukrainian theater. Those efforts, I think, are helping Ukrainian arts because we're more interested in them.
I think there's also the validity, and it's something that we experienced yesterday. They're just good. That there is something so deeply inherent and wonderful and deep and rich and soul-stirring when performers work there, that it is what happened to me. I was drawn there because of how strong it was. And that is something that I had not ever experienced in my work in America.
And I just wanted to add to that, listening to the music last night, but I think when you bring in the old traditions and cultures, and you bring them up to where they touch us somewhere, even though we don't know. But when we hear them and see them, we kind of go, oh, yeah, that's what it means to be here and to be human. It's to have that, all of those generations and generations of knowledge in the arts here in present moment.
Mary, how'd you get from Cambridge to Joshua Tree?
I drove.
Don't tell me that. I drove. I flew and boy, my arms tired.
I'm so tired. Yeah, no. Yeah. I drove. I did actually drive, but I was. I think I was on a quest to know what America was. So I grew up in Virginia. I lived in Florida, and I thought, where should I go next? So then I ended up in Boston, thinking it would be a little pit stop before I went to New York, and I just skipped.
By the way, it's pronounced Boston.
Oh, sorry, Boston. Yeah, okay. I skipped New York, and so I couldn't stay in Boston because it was too cold. So I said, I'm going to go west. And so I went to New Mexico for a while, and I was going to be this amazing shaman. And I don't know, I got caught up in theater. And so then I got...
Career choices. I know, shaman theater. Shaman...
Yeah, okay. They're close,
well,
right?
But now you're kind of doing both.
Now I'm kind of doing both, yeah. Mystical, right?
So, New Mexico.
New Mexico. Okay. And then I thought, well, that was fun. What else is out there? And so I went to San Francisco and lived in San Francisco and Berkeley for quite a while, actually. Did a lot of theater, did some music, met a lot of amazing artists there. And I thought, well, you know what? I really should go to, Los Angeles. That's where it's happening. And so I went to Los Angeles and did the same kind of thing there. I did some commercials, some this, some that, and then kind of burnt out. And a friend of mine had a house.
LA can be a tough town to try to break in.
My friend had a house in Morongo Valley, and she said, just come for a couple of weeks and, chill out. And I came for a couple of weeks, and I said, I think I'll just stay.
Okay. And how long ago was that?
10 years ago this month. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So I've been in the desert 10 years. Yeah.
And tell me about Hunter and the Wicked.
Hunter and the Wicked was a band, and now we're a duo. So it's a duo with my partner, Tom Merrick, and we are doing... Americana music, kind of folk, and we're mostly originals, and we just put out our second recording in February, and it's called Circus of the Sun, meaning the desert, the Circus of the Sun.
So you remain here because you remain inspired by here?
And I just love it here. And I do find, as many people have, that living in the desert creatively is expansive. It makes you expand. And it gives you time, which is really such a luxury.
Quote Mary Hunter, living in the desert makes you expand.
Ooh.
On that note, we're going to take a break. We'll be back with more of the Z1077 Up Close Show with our guests in studio today, the keynote speaker for the High Def Fringe Fest, Julianne Franco, and the co-founder, along with Ann Van Haney, Mary Hunter. And we're going to talk. I want to talk to you a little bit about a project, Sheba and Thought Theater, too. I want to bring that in. But we'll be right back with more on the Z1077 Up Close Show.
Community pharmacies do still exist. The biggest advantage they have is the ability to give you more personal attention. The staff at Star Pharmacy get to know their customers. It's easier to ask questions when you know your pharmacist. Star Pharmacy also carries durable medical equipment, wheelchairs, walkers, and other health aids. A full range of supplements to boost your immune system, even meds for your pet. Visit your local Star Pharmacy across from the post office in Joshua Tree.
At Morongo Basin Community Health Center, your health is our priority. That's why we have medical specialists, including chiropractic, behavioral health, and now dermatology, available right here in our convenient Yucca Valley and 29 Palms clinics. Make an appointment today. Call 760-365-9305 or log on to our new website, morongobasinhealth.org. Morongo Basin Community Health Center, a program of Morongo Basin Healthcare District.
If you're in the park, and outside of the park, too.
If you're staying in a vacation rental, please be quiet and respect the neighbors.
For a party half a mile away is close.
Sound travels far here. We can hear you.
Camp in designated sites only.
Backcountry camping is allowed only in designated areas. In those areas, it is required that you hike out at least 1 mile from any road, dirt, or paved.
Know that no trespassing signs do apply to you. Do not drive off of established roads. Please be respectful. Campfires are only allowed in established campfire fire pits.
Do not climb on or hang hammocks from Joshua trees.
They are fragile, and it is illegal.
Carry out your toilet paper and bury your 6 inches or deeper.
Not under a rock. Never, ever touch a tortoise.
It could be life-threatening for them.
Do not feed, approach, or try to touch any wildlife. Dogs are not allowed on trails.
If you are in town, slow down. It's Joshua Tree.
Be kind, be patient.
Joshua Tree is busier than ever, and we're trying our best.
Joshua Tree thanks you.
Yes, we do. And welcome back to the Z1077 Up Close Show. I'm your host, Gary Danielle. Our producer is Michelle Alley. And a number for you to call if you'd like to participate is 760-366-8471. Our guest in studio today is the keynote speaker of the High Def Fringe Fest, which starts this evening at the Joshua Tree Retreat Center in Joshua Tree. And the co-founder of said Fringe Fest, Mary Hunter, who founded it, along with Ann Van Haney, who has lovely curly hair. Okay, you can tell her I said that.
I will tell her. Okay.
Tell us a little bit about, we've got Mary Hunter, and mm-hmm. then we got Project Sheba, and then we got Thought Theater, and then we got the Fringe Fest. So you're a very busy busy lady. So tell us about Project Sheba, which is something you established before you came to the High Desert.
Right. The idea behind Project Sheba was just to produce art that was kind of edgy, and that was
inclusive. On the fringes.
On the fringes. Yeah. And it was also to put out the philosophy, if you want to say, of that we change the world one story at a time. So if we have the opportunity to tell our stories and our story is witnessed, that changes the person who's telling the story as well as the person who's hearing it. And that's how we make spiritual changes in the planet.
So Project Sheba set up to tap into that energy.
Yes. So Project Sheba set up to tap into that. That's where actually Thought Theater comes from, because I wanted to do...
So as Project Sheba taps into the energy, Thought Theater produces those ideas.
There you go. That's really brilliant.
Oh,
can
thanks.
I quote you?
Yeah, can.
Yeah, okay,
yeah,
great.
Right,
yeah. Thought Theater produces those things. So Thought Theater started out because I wanted to change some of the things that were happening here in the desert, and actually because I wanted to be cast in ways that I wasn't being cast. So I started doing these other shows and bringing people on. Anne has been with me since the first thing that we did. We've done original works. We've done works that are... We've redid Streetcar in a way that was
Stella.
And we just did True West down at the Grove Theater, and as well as we did a... the Thanksgiving play in September, which is a play about how we think it's a play about how Native Americans celebrate Thanksgiving, but it's actually a play about a group of white people trying to do a play about Thanksgiving that includes both the Pilgrims and the Native Americans, and it was really fascinating. Like they couldn't come up with it, but it made you think. And so that was kind of what we were trying to. That's what Thought Theater wants to do. It wants to make you think, and it wants to start dialogues.
And you've moved through a number of local venues. Tell us about that. By the way, I key on Streetcar because I directed it for a theater in Santa Barbara many years ago. It was a very, very powerful. It's a very powerful show.
It's a great show.
Particularly powerful production.
Yeah.
So I was key on that.
Yeah.
So tell us about the venues for Thought Theater.
So Thought Theater is not that we're technically homeless, but we're more of a traveling troupe.
Yeah.
And we do plays in different places. So we've done plays in 29 Palms. We've done them in Joshua Tree. We've done them in Yucca, and we've done them in Morongo Valley. And we just go to places that will house us, because not everyone goes, you're a theater company, what are you going to do? But the people that let us do what we do.
And how has your reception been in those different communities? Is it different in Morongo Valley than it is in Yucca Valley, than it is in 29 Palms, than it is in Wonder Valley?
Oh, Wonder Valley, right. Yeah. We've done it there too.
Right.
The reception is usually very warm. And people want to come. They want to know, who are you? What are you doing? Oh, I thought this was something. Oh, this is this. Oh, this is great. Well, thanks for coming to the community and bringing your work to the community.
So is Thought Theater developing a clientele, developing followers?
Yes, we are. We are developing followers, and we're kind of looking for a permanent home.
Okay. Well, if we could get Jason Momoa to buy the former theater in Yucca Valley and turn it into a community performing arts center.
Wouldn't that be awesome?
Yeah. Is that asking so much of our friends and neighbors?
No, I mean, you're here. Yeah. Don't you want theater?
Yeah. So you're still looking for a home, but I think part of the coolness of Thought Theater is that you can move around to the different venues.
Definitely.
And are the different venues accepting of the Thought Theater concept and what you're doing?
Yeah, and I think that's one of the reasons that we get to go to different places is because they're like, oh, this is not what's happening with your theater company. It's something different, and we want to see what that is also.
So, Julianne Franco, have you been keeping up with the activities of your former roommate as she brings these different offerings to desert communities?
Since Facebook, yes.
Okay. Facebook, yes. And your thoughts about Thought Theater, about having a company that is presenting things you don't normally see that aren't mainstream?
Oh, I think it's wonderful. Yeah. I think it's also necessary because so much of our theater world, by and large, has become so commercial and big that the idea of being able to reflect on things and looking at it in more experimental ways or more thought-provoking ways is not there because that's just not what sells. Thoughts don't sell. Big wow sells.
Although there have been some shows which have started as experimental theater and gradually worked their way up into the into the psyche of American theater. And that's kind of, I think, unique in this country where that can happen. Mm-hmm. And it starts with things like the Fringe Fest and starts with those things. Is there anything similar to Fringe Fest going on in Ukrainian theater now?
Right now, I don't know. I know we hosted at Les Corbus, Les Corbus Theater had a couple of small festivals, and we would bring in theaters who do similar types of work from around the world, in Europe specifically. That does definitely exist. I probably right now, I don't think festivals are going to happen, but who knows? But yeah, there is something. There actually, as she was talking, it was reminding me that there's a lovely theater, and it's called Theater in a Basket. They do not have a home, a permanent home, and they just go to play. They play in different theaters. I don't know if they are a state-sanctioned theater or not, but it's basically two women run it. There's the woman who's the director, and she directs all the plays, and then there's the one woman who's the actor, and she's the actor in all of the plays.
That's great.
And they do really good work, really interesting, thought-provoking work.
Okay, I got to take one more break. We'll come back with the final portion of the Z1077 Up Close Show. Don't go away.
This is Cody Joseph from The Morning Show with Cody and Jeff. Sue's Health Foods is a regular stop for me. I can get staples there that I can't find at the grocery store. Everything from booch to nooch, as Jeff likes to say. Cashews in bulk, miso paste, local honey, and sweet treats for my kids. They really like the fruit chews from the bulk bins. The bulk bins are probably our favorite part of the store, and the employees are always so friendly and helpful. We couldn't make half the recipes we love without the ingredients we get from Sue's. My family has been shopping there for years, and the quality and care we have gotten has always been top-notch. I love going there, and I love supporting a local business that has given so much to our community for so many years.
Sue's Health Food, committed to your good health.
What's the real story behind Pinocchio? What's Geppetto's side? Theater 29 presents a new take on the classic tale with Disney's ninth son Pinocchio, Geppetto's story. With a cast of 20 from 9 to 71, this fun musical is for the entire family. Show runs May 12th to the 28th with Friday and Saturday evening performances at 7 and Sunday matinees at 2:30. My Son Pinocchio tells how Geppetto wanted the Blue Fairy to take him back. Classic songs like When You Wish Upon a Star, plus new ones. Tickets available now at theater29.org.
Hi, this is Pastor Steve Webb of the 29 Palms Church of the Nazarene. Our goal at 29 Naz is to find God and seek His help to be good so that we can live well. And we plan to enjoy life all along the way. So if you've been looking for something more, please join us on your journey. Find out more on Facebook under 29NAZ and hear us every Sunday morning after the 7 a.m. news right here on Z1077.
And we are back with the final portion of the Z1077 Up Close Show. Now, Julianne Franco, we started to have a conversation before we went to a commercial break, but I want to finish it up. You mentioned state-supported theater companies. Does the state support the arts in the Ukraine? Is there a lot of support for the arts in that culture?
Yes, very much so. All of the museums, all of the theaters. I even think some of the musicians and orchestras and things of this nature, and there's different levels of support. When I started out working at Korbas Theater, they were Državni, which means that they're at basic state level, and now they've gone up to academic, which means that it's recognized as a higher rank. And then there's the highest rank, which is Narodni, loosely translated as the people. It's the highest level of theater. And most of the more commercial theaters are on the level of that, because that is sort of what in earlier times the state aspired to. Now that's somewhat changing. I would not at all be surprised if our theater became the highest level. Certainly our artistic director, Volodymyr Kuczynski.
Now, is that the theater that you work primarily with, the Korbas Theater?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And where is that located?
Les Korbas Street in Lviv, Ukraine.
Okay, so it's named after the street.
Yeah. No, it's named after Les Korbas.
Okay, thank you. Okay.
They named a street after him, I think, because the street was named after the theater, I think, in the instance of how all of that went. Because this is also sort of interesting, maybe irrelevant to our talk, but since I have been there, most of the streets have been named and renamed and renamed again and again and again.
They're taking the Russian names down and putting in Ukrainian ones?
Basically, yes.
Yeah.
Basically,
yeah.
Yes.
And what is your primary role with the Korbas Theater? Are you directing? Are you writing? Are you a consultant?
Right now, I am a consultant. I help them with the English aspects of things, or if they're going to tour somewhere, or if there's a project that they want to do, I help them to get that to be at the level of what their thought is to what they're trying to do. Their webpage, if anything that's in good English, I did. if you go there, and mission statements and things like that. That's now. Back in the day, I was their resident dramaturg, and also for a short while associate artistic director.
How long was that period of time?
Almost 7 years.
Okay.
Almost 7 years. And then
why'd you come back?
I left because I became a Fulbright scholar, and I was lecturing there at Lviv University, and I couldn't do both jobs at the same time, so I chose to leave it because that just seemed like a natural wave of what I had to bring to the theater. I think I brought that up to a certain kind of level, and I gave them basically the information, and I thought other people can do the job well, and if not better, than I did. So.
And to hear more from Julianne Franco, her keynote speech, What is the Role of the Arts and Humanities in War and Conflict, will be at Noble Hall at the Joshua Tree Retreat Center tomorrow evening at 8 p.m.
And it's free and open to the public,
and
starting at 7:30.
And yes. And open to the public.
Yes.
But the Fringe Fest is not. How does one get tickets?
To get tickets, thank you, Gary.
You're
welcome. Get tickets to the Fringe Festival, just go to the website, highdesertfringe.org, go to the ticket tab, and then just buy your tickets. And just to let you know, because of the wonderful grant we got from California Humanities, if you put in the code, the coupon code, 50, F-I-F-T-Y, you'll get 50% off any ticket.
Ooh, so get your ticket now.
Yeah, and do it on the website. Yeah.
And I want to say, Mary, that the Z1077 has been a sponsor of the Fringe Fest since its inception.
Yes.
6 years ago, and it's our effort to try to make the arts an important part of our lifestyle here mm-hmm. in the Morongo Basin, and it's nice to see the Fringe Fest becoming more and more successful.
Thank you, Gary.
Julianne, thank you so much for bringing your talent to the Morongo Basin. I hope you have a huge crowd at your remarks tomorrow, and appreciate you also being part of the cultural fabric of a very unique place that we call the Morongo Basin.
Yes, thank you.
That's going to do it for the Up Close Show. for today. Be sure to join me again next week for more Up Close. Until then, thanks for listening. Drive carefully and God bless. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Up Close, a weekly talk and interview program presented in the public interest by Z1077 News. Join Gary Denyeau again next Friday at 10 for more Up Close.